This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiao Yik. It is estimated that at any one time, more than 1.4 million people worldwide are suffering from infections acquired in hospitals. This is a serious threat to public health, you know, especially considering that multi-drug resistant organisms are on the rise as well. So in today's show, we'll be looking at why our hand hygiene is the single most effective method in reducing the transmission of infections in hospitals. And we have in the studio today, Associate Professor Dr. Sashila Ponam Pallavana, consultant infectious disease physician from University Malaya Medical Center. Good afternoon, Dr. Sashila. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Sashila, can we start? I know we've talked about multi-drug resistant organisms, or commonly known as antibiotic resistant organisms. We've talked about it many times before, but I think it's important enough. It deserves a refresher. So what exactly are they and how prevalent are they in Malaysia today?
So multi-drug resistant organisms are basically organisms that are resistant to the commonly used antibiotics. And therefore, if someone gets infected with an organism that is multi-drug resistant, the patient will need to go on antibiotics that are most likely that you need intravenous antibiotics. Some of them are more toxic. And some of the bugs are so resistant that currently there's no antibiotics that even work on them. So these are known as pan-drug resistant organisms.
How prevalent are infections caused by these resistant organisms?
So multi-drug resistant organisms, the rate of multi-drug resistant organisms differ from country to country, region to region, hospital to hospital. The common multi-drug resistant organisms are things like we know as methicillin-resistant Staph aureus or carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, Acinetobacter, which is resistant to carbapenem. So in Malaysia, the MRSA rate is about 17%. Maybe the others, it depends on the type of organism. Some of them may be 30%, some may be maybe just about 10%, depending on the type of organism that we're talking about.
And are we seeing an increase? Are these numbers indicating an upward trend?
Well, some organisms actually, I must say, some of them are actually in the downgo trend or at least static. Mm. But of course, there are some that are upgoing in trend, which is reflecting the nature of how things are across the globe. So yeah, so they kind of depends on the organism as well.
And how many deaths are caused by the multi-drug resistant organisms?
We do not have the rates exactly in Malaysia. What is the rate of death due to multi-drug resistant organisms? But we know that the risk of mortality or death is 2 times more if you are infected with a multi-drug resistant organism compared to someone who's not infected with a multi-drug resistant organism.
Okay. Yeah. And, I mentioned hospital-acquired infections earlier and that, at any one time, worldwide figures show more than 1.4 million people are suffering from these kinds of infections. So if you could explain, what exactly are they?
So hospital-acquired infections are infections that occur to patients while they are admitted in the hospital, and it was not brewing at the time when they got admitted. That means it's purely from the hospital. These infections include things like catheter-related bloodstream infection. When we put a line to put in our medication, it could be catheter-associated urinary tract infection when you put a catheter into the urinary system. It could be a pneumonia, a hospital-acquired pneumonia. It could be a ventilator-associated pneumonia, so someone gets ventilated. And the other big thing is a surgical site infection. So someone comes in with us for a surgery and they get wound gets infected. So these are the different kinds of hospital-acquired infections.
And are these infections caused by drug-resistant organisms?
If you get an infection in a hospital, it could be due to sensitive bugs, but more likely that bug would be resistant because the bug that is circulating in the hospital is most likely resistant because, they are exposed to a lot of antibiotics and that is the bug that is circulating.
Of course, yeah. And how common are these, hospital infections? How common are they in our healthcare facilities?
So I think in Malaysia, we do point prevalence survey depending on, how big the hospital is and the type of patients they have, because some hospitals actually see very sick patients. They do more operations like the general hospital, university hospital, compared to smaller district hospitals. So on average, I would say the rate of hospital hospital-acquired infections in our country could range from somewhere between 2% to 6%, depending on the type of hospital.
Just for some comparison, is that low? Is that high?
I would say it's a kind of average because, you know, in Europe, it's been said sometimes it's been as high as 7%. So again, it depends on the type of hospital. But of course, we should aim to be much lower than that because there are hospitals with even much lower, 2%, 3%.
You know, how is there a standard surveillance across all hospitals for these infections?
So in Malaysia, we have a national point prevalence survey. That means almost all hospitals, government hospitals and university hospitals look at the rate of infections on one day in the hospital. And we do that once a year. So we kind of have that point prevalence survey. Individual hospitals may look at certain type of hospital-acquired infection. Like they might want to do a surveillance on catheter-related bloodstream infection or surgical site infection to a particular surgery like cesarean section. So that would depend on each hospital, on what surveillance they want to do.
You know, we assume that being in a hospital, things are done in a sterile manner and that infection control measures are taken. So, you know, how do these infections still occur?
So unfortunately, though there are protocols and procedures and infection control measures to be taken, practices may not reflect what's in the protocol. So people, you know, healthcare workers sometimes still do not follow the infection control measures to the dot. Simple things like hand hygiene, making sure that they use the alcohol-based hand rub during the 5 moments that they should before patient contact, before aseptic procedure, after contact with body fluids and after touching the patient's surrounding. You know, they may not wear the proper protective equipment when they see the patient, especially someone who's got a multi-drug resistant organism, and that way they transmit the infection to the organism to the next patient. Environmental cleaning is very important in hospitals, and if the environment is not cleaned properly with the proper disinfectant, there's a chance that the organism would remain there, and when the next patient comes to that bed, they will get infected by the organism. So, and of course, the other thing is equipment cleaning. We use a lot of equipment in the hospital. Some are single use and thrown away, but some of them are used multiple use. So, of course, there are sterilization and disinfectant protocols. And if there's a breach in that, there's also a risk of transmission of infections.
Is the risk only for inpatients, like those in wards, as opposed to outpatient, you know, clinics?
No, so in fact, because the patients stay, if it's an outpatient clinic, they would not fulfill the definition of hospital-acquired infection because you need to be in the hospital for more than 48 hours and then develop the infection. Of course, in a outpatient setting, it would be things like hemodialysis, patients who come in 3 times a week
for
to get
like the daycare
sort of thing. So they have a line, and when a healthcare worker does not use the line in an aseptic manner, there's a chance of introducing an infection, and that's known as a healthcare-associated infection.
That does occur as well?
Definitely, okay. It does.
And, you know, just very briefly, I talked about numbers, more than 1.4 million people worldwide having these kinds of infections, but in the reality is, what is the impact when you contract a healthcare-associated infection?
So, of course, the worst thing that could happen is mortality. So because, you know, the infections are not easy to treat because you can't use the standard therapy. You need to use combination therapy. You use therapy which you think would be best for the patient because there's no standardized drugs now. Number two is mortality, morbidity, because, you know, sometimes if just say they have a wound infection and because we can't optimally treat that bug because we don't have the antibiotic, they end up with an amputation. So they end up with morbidity. Of course, hospital cost, because most of the drugs that need to be treated, you need to treat multi-drug resistant organisms with intravenous. So the length of stay in hospital goes up. They need IV line. So the length of stay in the hospital increases. The longer you stay in a hospital, you increase risk for another hospital-acquired infection.
Yes.
So it's a vicious cycle at the end of the day. And of course, cost to both patient and society and the hospital.
Could you get multiple infections?
Yes. You know, you could start off with a surgical site infection and then you put in a line for an antibiotic and then you get a line-related infection and then you get very sick and then you need to be ventilated and you get a ventilator-associated pneumonia.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can get multiple hospital-acquired infections. The longer you stay stay in the hospital, the higher the risk.
I mean, how long could these hospital stays extend to?
We've seen patients in the hospital for 30 days, 40 days, yeah, depending on where the site of infection is. Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, healthcare-associated infections, especially linked to drug-resistant, multi-drug-resistant organisms today, and how hand hygiene is a key strategy in preventing this. Associate Professor Dr. Sashila Ponnampalavana, consultant infectious disease physician from University Malaya Medical Centre, is in the studio with me. We'll be right back on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Ik. I have Associate Professor Dr. Sashila Ponnampalavana, Consultant Infectious Disease Physician from University Malaya Medical Centre in the studio. We're talking about hand hygiene as the key control for healthcare-associated infections. And just before the break, Dr. Sashila talked about what exactly are healthcare-associated infections. It could be infections that you get when you are in the hospital that was not brewing when you entered the hospital, and they could arise from things like the catheter placed in the bloodstream or the urine for the urinary system. It could be pneumonia, it could be ventilator based, or it could arise from surgical the surgical site as well. And Dr. Sashila, you've already talked about the protocols that are in place, so let's narrow down on hand hygiene as the sort of like the most fundamental thing that healthcare workers should be doing. What is the importance of hand hygiene? It just seems so simple.
Yeah, so I think it's more of, because it's so simple, people can't believe that it's so effective. And also because you can't see the germs, so people believe it's not there. And so they tend to forget that they need to wash their hands before each patient. Hand hygiene, you know, many studies have shown that hand hygiene is the single most effective way of preventing the transmission of organisms from one patient to another. You know, it has shown to reduce multi-drug resistant MRSAs, ESBLs, and also it's been shown to be most cost-effective to implement this strategy to reduce your multi-drug resistant organisms. Even in University of Malaya, just by improving our hand hygiene among healthcare workers, we've managed to reduce the rates of many of the multi-drug resistant organisms, even in our hospital. It's very effective. So the hand hygiene for healthcare workers, WHO has got a protocol, Clean Hands Saves Lives. And there's a 5 moment of hand hygiene where the healthcare worker must adhere to. One is before they touch the patient. So, you know, if the doctor comes into the room, and even if they want to shake hands with the patient, before we do that, we have to wash our hands with alcohol-based hand rub. So how many times has a doctor done that?
Pleasantly surprised that when I've been in the hospital, the moment the doctor comes into the room, and in the hospitals I've been in, there's the alcohol-based hand rub attached to the wall, so they'll automatically do that.
That's
so
fantastic. That's good. That's good. So that's very good. And that's the first moment before patient contact.
Okay.
The second moment is before aseptic technique. So that means, you know, if they were going to touch the patient's line or administer some fluids or prepare the medication, they must again scrub their hands with alcohol-based hand rub. And then the third moment is you know, after they have finished touching something that is soiled or fluids around the patient, they must again wash their hands. And then you have after patient surrounding, they must wash their hands before after patient surrounding.
What exactly is patient surrounding?
So patient surrounding is the area around the patient. That means the patient's you know, the bedstand, the cardex table. So these are the areas, if the doctor or, you know, any healthcare worker goes into the room, and or even the drip stand. So sometimes the doctor or the nurse puts in hangs a new medication for the patient. If they touch that, and even if they didn't touch the patient and they come out, that's after patient surrounding.
They should.
Because studies have shown that even though the patient has the organism, there's risk of these organisms being in the patient's surrounding. And that's been shown in almost lots of studies, that if you swabbed the surrounding area of the patient, you will get the same organisms that the patient has. So we assume that your hands are already contaminated once you touch the patient's surrounding, and therefore when you leave, you need to wash your hands.
Yeah. What about, you know, what the healthcare workers are wearing? Could organisms, you know, linger on that?
Yeah, so there have studies that have shown that you know, organisms have been identified on healthcare workers' attire, like on their sleeves, on the coat, on ties.
Ties.
Yeah. So most hospitals, doctors don't wear ties anymore. Yeah. The lanyards that we wear, handphones.
Yes. Yes, stethoscope. Studies looking at that. Yeah.
Yeah. And stethoscopes as well on sleeves. So it's very important that these things are wiped down before patient. And it's good not to use your handphone, you know, and if you have to answer your phone, it's important that you wash your hands before and after you use your phone as well.
Okay. So we're talking about not just doctors then, you know, who needs to practice hand hygiene?
Everybody needs to practice hand hygiene. So doctors, nurses, nurse assistants, student nurses, medical students, even patients' carers, you know, because the carer may be the one feeding the patient or doing dressing for the wound. So they should also be practicing the 5 moments of hand hygiene so that they don't contaminate at least some of the moments, you know, before they touch the wound, after they touch the wound, those sort of things. Or anyone who is involved in patient care should do the 5 moments of hand hygiene or know about it.
Yeah. Visitors as well?
Visitors should at least wash their hands before they see the patient and after they see the patient. Or if, you know, a carer who's taking care of wounds or lines or feeding the patient, then they should probably do a bit more. Yeah.
Can good hand hygiene alone offset other risk factors for healthcare-associated infections, like immunosuppression or being of older age?
Yes. So, I mean, if you're immunosuppressed and you're older or you're young, in the extreme of ages, whether you're too old or you're too young, of course, the risk of infection is very, very high, much higher than someone who's not. But hand hygiene has shown to even reduce infections in these groups. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, let's talk about how many of our healthcare workers are actually following these protocols. You know, how would you rate the compliance?
So we do hand hygiene audits in the hospital in nationally, and because it's an observed hand hygiene audit, we actually watch the audit. Healthcare workers do it. They know that they're being audited, so the rate looks abnormally good.
Because it's self-reporting, isn't it?
They don't self-report, but an infection control nurse will observe a healthcare worker.
Right. And but they know they're being observed. There's a bias.
Yes, there's a bias there. So the national KPI for hand hygiene compliance is 75%. And it's pretty good. In most hospitals, it's more than 75% that's observed hand hygiene. But if you go back to the back door and maybe you want to see how much of hand rub has been used or soap has been used in the hospital, which you can calculate, I think the rate will only be about 50%.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, then why, despite it being a simple step, to be done, despite it being so effective, why is it so difficult to remind ourselves to do it?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. One is knowledge. I think sometimes people genuinely do not know. Number two is sometimes, you know, it's been shown that wards that are more busy, the rate of compliance is lesser because they're running around all over the place. So how busy a healthcare worker is also has a bearing on compliance. Number two is the availability of alcohol-based hand rub. If it's not on the bedside of the patient and it's, you know, at the entrance of the door, I don't think a healthcare worker is going to go all the way back 5 times to wash their hands. So where it is also important. So the infrastructure should be there for people to be compliant to their hand hygiene practices. The other thing is, I think, just behavior. Some people, you know, those are the recalcitrant ones. There are very few people like that. But I think mainly it's busy. You know, people are really busy or the infrastructure doesn't permit the alcohol-based hand rub to be on every bed. So that's always cost involved in that.
I mean, you speak about knowledge. I mean, is this part of, you know, the training that all healthcare workers go through?
So I think, you know, I don't believe during my time there was no special classes on hand hygiene. We went into the wards and we said,
clean your hands. You know,
you need to wash your hands. But now most medical curriculums have dedicated modules on hand hygiene. Mm-hmm. And even new house officers that come into our hospital or medical officers have to undergo a hand hygiene module. And there's a competency assessment to make sure that they know what they need to do.
Mm, all right. So, you know, speaking then more institutionally or systemically, what do healthcare facilities need to do to improve hand hygiene practices?
I think one of the most important thing, you need administrative support. You know, you should always make sure the infrastructure is there. You have enough alcohol-based hand wraps. You have to have enough healthcare workers or doctors and nurses so that they're not bogged down and, you know, they have ample time to do what they need to do in a safe manner. So a good working culture and administrative bodies are the ones, you know, make the call. The other thing is, I think administration should also support the hand hygiene initiatives. I see that hospitals who have good support from their administrators, the directors of the hospital, have better hand hygiene compliance. Well, I think that is one thing. Education and the facilities, I think that should be the most important thing.
What has UMMC, implemented? I know recently that there was an initiative for a pledge. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's this Train the Trainers program that was done by WHO Geneva, the university from Geneva. So they are the first people who initiated this 5 moments of hand hygiene and brought it into WHO. And so Malaysia, University of Malaya was chosen to host the Train the Trainers program this year. So we had participants from different hospitals in Malaysia coming down, and we had Professor Didier Pitté with his team from all the way from Geneva, conducting this training course. So we also took the opportunity for our director to sign the pledge, the hand hygiene pledge. Mm. It's a pledge basically to say that we support, and he supports with the rest of the team in the hospital, to uphold all initiatives to improve hand hygiene and reduce hospital-acquired infection. So it's a pledge that many countries have signed since 2005.
What about hand hygiene in the community setting? You know, for us at home, in schools, I imagine it's particularly important for, you know, those childcare centres and kindergartens, in workplaces as well. What is the role of hand hygiene in reducing in transmission of infections?
Yeah, I think it's very important that, you know, the public is aware how important hand hygiene is in preventing communicable diseases such as respiratory infections, you know, especially in children, you know, influenza, either viral infections, and also diarrheal diseases like rotavirus. And simple hand hygiene can prevent this hand foot mouth disease. So all this, you know, you have to make sure hand hygiene is always maintained, environmental cleaning is done. So the public should be aware that they should wash their hands when they handle food, or before and after food, or waste, diaper changing. Hand hygiene should be practiced as well, not only in the hospital.
Mm. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of these hand washers and sanitizers available in the market, though. Can you just give us some tips? You know, what's the best one?
Yeah.
Is there really a difference?
So I think in a public setting, soap and water is always the best, okay? Especially because if your hands are soiled, you know, there's visible soiling of the hand, soap and water is the best. You cannot use alcohol-based hand rub at that time. And even if you didn't have soap and water, you can use alcohol-based hand rub, but you must wash your hand with soap and water immediately. So if your hands are soiled, definitely soap and water. If, as an alternative, you can use alcohol-based hand rub, but, you know, the alcohol content must at least be 60% and above. But you have to be careful when you use it with kids, because, you know, so that they don't swallow it or splash it into the eyes. So you have to be careful with that. But of course, after you put the alcohol-based hand rub, you don't want to eat your food. So, you know, that's why soap and water is still the best thing, you know, especially if you're using your hands to eat.
Yep.
If you're using fork and spoon, that's fine, I guess.
All right. So, yeah, good old soap and water.
Yeah, very effective.
Going back to what our mothers, our grandmothers were always telling us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, do you have a final message about hand hygiene?
So I think, so two prongs. I think to healthcare workers, I think our first, you know, our oath was to always do what's right for patient care. And I think if you can't do anything, at least wash your hands before you see a patient. Because as a doctor, I think, I mean, I've seen a lot of complicated cases and, you know, we managed to do very good surgeries, treat severe dengue and bring patients out of, you know, death's bed. But we have also the cause of death for many patients because we just don't wash our hands, you know, causing hospital-acquired infection. So I think everyone should, you know, whether you're a physician or a surgeon or a nurse or a medical student, you should wash your hands to prevent an infection, hospital-acquired infection in the hospital. And the public, I think, they too should take their part in washing their hands and preventing communicable diseases like respiratory tract infection, viral infections, diarrheal diseases. And also if they kind of get admitted in the hospital, I think they should speak up and always ask their doctors and nurses whether they've washed their hands. I think it should be a two-way thing and we should be empowered to take care of our own health.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much, Dr. Sashila. That was Associate Professor Dr. Sashila Ponnampalavana, Consultant Infectious Disease Physician from the University of Malaya Medical Centre, talking about the importance of hand hygiene. You're listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.